Stay tuned for Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah, featuring two film critics with distinctly different tastes in movies, Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net. He thinks her tastes are shallow. She thinks his are pretentious. Listen in as they discuss and debate new releases and other film-related topics. Let the clash begin.
Hello and welcome to this edition of Cinema Clash. I am Charlie Jewell from CharlieJewell.com, and with me is my co-host Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net. Hello, Hannah.
Hey, Charlie.
How you doing?
I'm doing okay. A little under the weather because of the wonderful temperature swings that we're having here on the East Coast.
But and it's nothing to do with any movies you saw this week?
I don't think so. I'm going to blame it on the weather and not so much on the movies.
I think you're going to blame it because 2 weeks in a row now, we have made bets and you are now 0-2.
Okay, I will blame perhaps my really poor betting skills on the oncoming illness.
So to catch you up for our listeners, at the end of last week's show, I bet that Deadpool, which no one knew was going to be as big as it turned out to be, would more than double the cume take-homes of both How to Be Single and Zoolander 2. And not only did it double it, I think it might have quintupled it.
And I knew within an hour of making that bet that I had already lost. When I saw just how well Deadpool was doing last Friday, I knew I was screwed, and I knew I had to get you an actual, real, decent bottle of wine.
You made up for last week's airplane bottle. This is a fantastic, looks like it says Dark Red Blend, California 2014. It's outstanding. It's really good.
It is. It's a Ménage à Trois Midnight. And so,
now, it says Ménage à Trois here, and I have to look on the back what it is. It's a blend of, I have no idea. It doesn't even say. Is it that good, Hannah? It doesn't even say what it is.
I don't know.
It doesn't say if it's a Cabernet or a Merlot.
I don't know, but it's got voluptuous black cherry and something else flavors with hints of mocha and exotic spice. I mean, really, how can you go wrong?
I don't know my exotic spices, but I think I get the hint of mocha. But it's really good.
It is.
Well done.
Thank you.
So 2016, still relatively new year, and it's an even numbered year. Therefore, that means it's an Olympic year.
Ah, yes.
Now,
good segue.
I haven't been paying attention. Is this summer or winter Olympics this year? I guess it's summer since
it's
happening
Brazil,
in August.
Except who knows with the Zika virus if anyone will actually
be attending.
That's
right. They were talking about they could cancel the Olympics. I don't think they will.
Yeah, but it's definitely it's going to be a tough competition. See who actually shows up.
Well, speaking of the Summer Olympics, back in 1936, they held a Summer Olympiad in Berlin, and taking place in those Olympics was a man named Jesse Owens. I've heard the name. I didn't know too much about him. I knew he did very well, and I knew why it was so important, and we'll get to about why. And this was technically a biopic of the most important years of Jesse Owens' life, mid-30s, mid-depression, his collegiate and Olympic career. Hannah, what did you think of Race?
I thought Race was okay. It wasn't as good as I was hoping it would be. It's a decent enough movie. I think for someone like you who wasn't as familiar with the story, I think it's a good introduction to his story. I think I saw back in the 80s the Jesse Owens story, which was a TV movie at the time that I remember being very impressed by the story and wanting to learn more about Jesse Owens. So this movie was actually a story that I did know to some degree, but giving it an updated treatment was a good idea. And I think that Stefan James, who plays Jesse Owens, actually was very well cast in this movie.
I did like Stefan James. He had a lot of work to do. It was a really challenging role. I don't think he knocked it out of the park. I think he did. He was effective, but not, he didn't kill it. We remember Stefan James from a little over a year ago. He was in Selma. He played then-student John Lewis to later become Congressman John Lewis, and I think he did very well in Selma.
He did.
And he does just fine here. But the more interesting casting choice is the man who plays his coach at Ohio State University. Larry Snyder is played by Saturday Night Live alum Jason Sudeikis.
Yes.
What did you think of Jason?
I have seen such mixed reviews of Jason Sudeikis' performance. I think he held his own. I was fine with his performance. I thought his character was written in such a way that there was a lot of cliche, got a little cheesy in some moments, but I most enjoyed the movie when there was interaction between the coach and Jesse Owens. That's when the movie was most appealing to me.
That's probably its main thrust, is the relationship between track star and coach, a segregated black student and white coach who doesn't realize the struggle and obstacles that Jesse is going through while he is going through the training regimen. I thought Sudeikis did okay. I don't obviously recognize him as a dramatic actor, and he wasn't really, it's not really a drama, but there's a lot of drama in here.
Yeah.
It's actually stuffed to the gills with plot. There's so much going on in Race that we're going to get to, and of course, as the coach, he also has to sit on the bleachers with a flask, because that's what coaches do.
I know. What is it with all these movies lately where the coach is always some sort of closet alcoholic, or not even closet alcoholic, just an overt alcoholic? It's strange, because when we talk about Eddie the Eagle next week, it's a very similar theme in that movie as well.
And a very similar flask.
Very similar flask.
And so there's a complete other half of Race that is not just watching Jesse Owens sprint back and forth on a track. And it takes place in Berlin, and some very well-known names. There is Nazi Minister of Culture and Propaganda Joseph Goebbels, who doesn't actually say a lot, but man, he looks like a serial killer.
I don't know. I kind of thought he looked like one of those characters, the Nazi characters out of like the Wonder Woman series from the 70s.
And kind of his adversary, but perhaps, I don't know, Not friend, but co-worker, colleague, is famous Nazi director Leni Riefenstahl. She was in charge of filming the 1936 Olympics because Nazi Germany, this was their big coming out party. They wanted to show the world how strong they were now, and they were going to use the Olympics as a propaganda piece, and she was their best director at the time. She had already completed 1935's Triumph of the Will, a very controversial, you know, look how strong the Aryan race kind of film is. And there's a lot of, there's still, to this day, in cinematic film history, Leni Riefenstahl is a very divisive figure. Some people say she was just used. She had to do it. She didn't have a choice. And other people say, no, she was willing. She was complicit. She believed in the ideology. No one knows for fact which side that is, but a lot of people still do not like holding up Leni Riefenstahl as an example of a good director, and this movie is the most sympathetic representation of Leni Riefenstahl I have ever seen.
Yeah, I think it glosses over her character a little too much, and I'm not sure that that she was really being played. I think she was enjoying her role in being a director. And yes, it turns out that she had to have a perspective, and that perspective was propaganda, ultimately. She was very obsessed with getting the perfect shots. It sort of almost felt like she was doing what today would be just sort of a reality show shoot.
Well, her product was released in 1938. It was called Olympia. It was a documentary of the entire thing, and it was very good. People still hold it up as an example of early documentary success. Goebbels originally cut out the scenes with Jesse Owens. He could not show a black man besting his Aryan race. And you know, Jesse wound up winning 4 gold medals. Sorry, spoiler, but it's not a spoiler. It happened in 1936, people.
That's right.
And she fought and kept the footage in. So that footage is actually in Olympia.
Yeah, and I'm glad we have that footage. It's very important footage. It's footage that I think people are used to seeing. It's great that there's this black and white footage from the Olympic Stadium in Berlin in 1936. So for historical purposes, it's great if she really was as adamant as she appears in the film to get these particular shots and have all the resources that she had, then I think it shows ultimately that having that stuff for posterity is very important.
There's a scene that happened that takes place in the stadium, and I think it's my favorite scene of the entire film, of a kind of a long film, kind of a dragging on film, but this particular scene blew my mind. They went to Berlin and they filmed in the Olympic Stadium. It still stands, it's still there, and they filmed inside of it. Jesse Owens emerges from the tunnel. There's 100,000 people screaming, and the camera is circling around him. It's spinning around him as he spins around looking at this mayhem, and then it gets cheesy. He looks above, and there's that a Hindenburg.
Well, and you've got all these people in the stands, which unfortunately was not very cheesy and you know, is supported by the historical footage of all these people shouting Heil Hitler in the stands. And that's a huge part of this movie, too, is that political dynamic that was in play, whether the United States should have even participated in the Olympics. They had contemplated boycotting the Olympics in 1936. And in the end, Jesse Owens ended up winning his 4th medal because he was entered last minute in a relay race where two Jewish runners were supposed to be in that relay. And there's some question as to whether they were pulled for political purposes to appease Hitler. And so I wonder whether or not things might have been different if we had, in fact, boycotted those Olympics, and whether that would have made some sort of major statement, as a character by William Hurt in this movie definitely shows. He quit the Olympic Committee over the decision not to boycott. And so there's just a lot of politics in play. The civil rights, very, very, very early days of the civil rights movement and the NAACP are in play. There's a lot going on in this movie, and I think that's why it doesn't quite work as well as it should, is because there's just so many different things going on and it loses its focus a little bit.
You're right that there is so much going on here, and I think the problem is it never tied it all together. There are so many loose ends and so many subplots. Director Stephen Hopkins, he did Predator 2, and oh, here's my favorite.
I missed that one.
Nightmare on Elm Street 5, The Dream Child.
Missed that one too.
1998's Lost in Space, I think 92's Judgment Night starring Emilio Estevez. Anyways, he's got a long career. You touched on it. There's another subplot going on of the Olympic Committee, and they're philosophizing back and forth. On one side is William Hurt, Oscar winner, and on the other side is Jeremy Irons, Oscar winner. And William Hurt's saying, how can we go to these Olympics? It's giving support to this odious regime that just wants to use this as propaganda. And on the other side is Jeremy Irons playing Avery Brundage, a real-life man, and he's saying, you should never mix politics and sport. Sport is too pure to mix politics. However, we all learn that Avery mixes sport with business.
That's right.
And it doesn't leave open the question of did they want Jesse to run in place of the Jewish guys because he was faster or because the Nazis didn't want the Jews to run. The race takes a side on that. It paints Avery Brundage as a bad dude. He makes the decision to pocket some money because he gets hired to build the German embassy in D.C. that he would lose the business if the Jewish runners ran. So he sat them down and replaced them with Jesse Owens.
Yeah, and I think I read that those two Jewish runners never got to compete because 4 years later, the Olympics were not held because of the war. So there's definitely a subplot there. There's probably a whole separate story in there. So for all its flaws, though, I still think what makes this movie a valuable watch is the story itself and introducing that story, much like 42 did in 2013 with the Jackie Robinson biopic. This one presents an opportunity for the younger generations to learn this story.
42 is probably Race's closest cousin. It's also close to Selma and close to Get On Up, but 42 mm-hmm. is very close. And they both put Race front and center. Race, obviously, the double meaning is very overt and very apparent. Like in 42, the coach of the opposite team was just standing right outside the dugout, yelling the N-word over and over and over as Jackie Robinson was at the plate at an at-bat. He's just yelling the N-word. I'm like, oh, good Lord. And Race doesn't shy away from that either. You got the scenes at the back of the bus. You got the scenes where the football team has to shower first before any of the black guys can shower. And the NAACP, the early iteration of the NAACP, makes an appearance. I think 42 was a little bit more overt about the Jim Crow issues. Even though he's in Columbus, Ohio, which is not the Deep South, they are still enforcing segregation and Jim Crow practices. Absolutely. They are separate.
Well, and one interesting sidebar to the whole race plot is that you get the sense that Jesse Owens, and I think he really did feel this way, that he was treated better in Germany than he was in the United States as an African American. And he got to actually stay in the hotel on the same floor with the rest of the team, whereas when he was in the United States, he was relegated to, in essence, the servants' quarters entrance and things like that. So there's just so much going on with this movie, and you can read a lot into the subtext of the political situation both in Germany and in the United States at the time. And it leaves some room for interpretation. And then at its core, though, it's your traditional sports biopic.
You know, there are subplots we haven't even mentioned yet. I don't even want to get into them, but he makes a friend at the Olympics. Mm-hmm. His fiercest competitor is a German, and they have a very good scene together talking about life. And there's Jesse Owens in college already had a daughter with his girlfriend, and there's an entire subplot about the girlfriend. Will they get married? Will they not? Does he cheat on her? Is he going to go back to her? That I hated that subplot. It doesn't work at all.
And I think that that whole subplot was rewritten to some degree by his family, who had script approval for this movie, which is interesting. And so there were extramarital affairs. I suspect there might have been more than what we see in this movie. But again, they wanted, you know, they feel that the movie ultimately is a good overall portrayal. But I suspect that a lot of the personal shortcomings of Jesse Owens were probably glossed over for the sake of the greater message.
Well, they only stuck with those 3 years, so there couldn't be that many shortcomings.
That's true, too. It really only focuses on Jesse Owens once he's going off to college through those years, then where he wins his medals. And then, of course, you know, there's the little bit of the picture cards at the end of the movie that are always fun to see that sort of tell you what happened in the years since.
Well, to wrap it up, there's a lot going on in race, more than racing. There is so much going on. But it drags. It doesn't tie it all together. The parts don't equal the sum. I'm not the biggest supporter of the movie Race. I say go see 42 instead.
Well, and I say go see Selma if you haven't, because a lot of people miss that movie, and Stefan James is excellent in it. It was a very good movie, and it just fell off the radar very fast. So I think that one's worth saying number one. 42 would be number two. Race would be number three. But again, if you like that sports biopic genre, it's still a story that's worth learning more about.
Yeah, I agree with your ranking, absolutely. Selma's the best movie out of all those, and it did get lost in the Oscar rush, I think, late last year.
Yeah, and it's worth noting also that Eddie the Eagle is another movie that's coming out next week, and we'll talk about that more extensively next week, but I think it's going to hurt both movies that you've got two movies coming out within 2 weeks that are sports biopics that are focused on, one is on the 1988 Olympics in Calgary, and then you have this one on the 1936 Olympics in Berlin. Both have a strong plot line about the relationship between the coach and the athlete, and the biggest difference from what I've heard is that Eddie the Eagle is probably 10 to 15% accurate, whereas I think this one with Race is probably significantly more accurate.
Absolutely, it's got to be far more accurate, and I foresee a possible bet. Which Olympic movie is going to make more money?
I know, maybe. But Eddie the Eagle has Hugh Jackman, but we'll save that for
next week. We might agree on that. And it's weird that you have these two movies about the Olympics in an Olympic year not being released in theaters around the Olympics. So you got to wonder what's coming.
That's true, too.
Race is the biggest film being released in theaters this week. There's also Risen. It's from Sony. It's for the faith-based population that we did not see it.
We have no faith that it'll do all that well.
It
might do.
It might probably come in third or something.
It might be fine, but yeah,
but,
it just didn't.
It's Joseph Fiennes as a Roman, a non-believer, who I'm going to assume he ends up believing. And then
I'll take that bet.
The other movie releasing this week is a horror film called The Witch. It is getting significant critic love right now.
Really?
Yeah, people say this film is horrifying. It will scare you to death.
And not horrifyingly bad.
No,
just like
but
horrifyingly
horrifying. Like, it will scare you. And that really makes me want to see it.
Yeah, I have no desire. I'm just not a horror chick. I do not like horror movies for the most part. So I skip that one.
Well, in limited release this week is a film I did see. It's a foreign film. It was Chile's submission to the Best Foreign Film Oscar. It did not make the final five. It's directed by Pablo Larraín. Maybe a couple years ago you saw his last movie, which was nominated for a Best Foreign Film Oscar. It was called No, and it was about the first democratic election in a long time in Chile in like 1988 that was going to kick out Pinochet. It was all about advertising ploys and marketing, and I really liked that movie. I thought it was great. But this one, The Club, is... So we all saw Spotlight. Spotlight is from the outside looking in. Journalists prying open secrets, prying open barred doors. The Club is from the inside out. It's about one of those houses that was featured in Spotlight, where all the priests who get in trouble get put into like into a house to live together and, I don't know, atone, repent, do penance. So they're in Chile in this small seaside town, and there's four priests and a nun who takes care of them, all just hiding out together, put there by the church because they done some bad stuff. Not all of them are pedophiles. I think only two of them.
Only two.
One of them was complicit in, you know, government political murders. One of them was guilty of kidnapping kids from poor families and giving them the rich family. So they have their different sins to atone for.
Okay.
And none of them, I think, are really repentant. They all think, you know, nothing I did was really that wrong. A new priest shows up. His past follows him. Secrets start getting aired. The club is... I gave it a 3 out of 4. 3 stars.
Wow.
Out of 4. I liked it. It's not as good as No, his last one. It's very gray. It's very washed out. They're not trying to make anything bright. And he's critiquing the Catholic Church. He's saying, you're taking it... The church is taking it upon itself to punish its own. They're taking it out of the court system, and they're punishing their own by putting them in remote houses. It's not Spotlight. Spotlight's much better. But this is from a different perspective, and I really liked it. So if you're into current events, what's going on with the Catholic Church, this the club might be up your alley.
I was going to ask, really, who's the target demo on this one?
Well, anyone who likes foreign films and anyone who's interested in that particular current events. And it's not this obscure metaphorical movie. What does it all mean? It's not, you don't have to figure anything out. It's a straight up story. There's a plot and there's characters you learn to, you don't sympathize with them because they're awful people, but it's a good watch.
Well, I think there's so many people that still have to see Spotlight, and I would hope that that they do before the Oscars next week. Just to point out that Spotlight is actually going to be released on DVD on Tuesday. So if people haven't seen it and they want to have a really good sense of the competition for the Oscars, I think Spotlight is one that, it's like, squeeze that in before next Sunday if you can.
I don't understand how you could watch the Oscars and not have seen Spotlight. It's probably in the top two of running for Best Picture nominees. There's a 49% chance it's going to win.
Yeah.
So I urge you, if you have not seen Spotlight, to certainly see it. It is released on DVD this coming Tuesday. More importantly, in my opinion, this past Tuesday, currently available on DVD, anywhere you want to go rent it, is Steve Jobs, last year's best film, in my opinion. And if you haven't seen
it,
it's just a crime to yourself if you haven't seen Steve Jobs yet.
Oh, I think Spotlight should go above Steve Jobs, but Steve Jobs was fine. I liked it well enough. I thought Michael Fassbender did a fine job as Steve Jobs, but that movie just, to me, was, again, the third Steve Jobs movie I'd seen in 3 years.
And proves how good it is, because
it's a little overkill.
So hard hitting.
I don't know. I guess if you want to see Kate Winslet's performance to know whether or not she deserves a Best Supporting Actress nomination, or if she deserves to win, then Steve Jobs is certainly worth picking up. But I'm not sure if there's really any other Oscar category that that folks would really need to see that to fill out their Oscar pool next week.
No, because the biggest scandal, there's a bigger scandal than the lack of diversity this year, folks, and it is Steve Jobs not getting nominated for Best Adapted Screenplay.
Yeah, I actually was surprised to see that was not on the final nomination list, because Aaron Sorkin is an excellent writer, and his dialogue is so strong that I think that was a definite snub. Even though I would not have ultimately voted for it, I think it was a snub.
Well, a movie also just out on DVD that was nominated for nothing, and deservedly nothing, and is not very good, but is based on a very true story, is The 33, about the 33 Chilean miners trapped underground for months and months and months, weirdly starring French woman Juliette Binoche as a Chilean woman.
Is she the one who goes around selling the empanadas?
She does. She's the local empanada saleswoman, and she's the one who gets to slap the heck out of the Minister of Mines.
It was a weird character. And the movie was a disappointment, because I remember so vividly the real footage and how people were sort of really on pins and needles waiting for that rescue, and how you got to see the cameras that were actually able to go down there while these miners were still trapped in the days before they were able to be brought up to the ground. I just think that it could have been better. It was really disappointing. Great story.
It could have been so much better.
It's just such a phenomenal story. You could not have written a better story.
And I don't think it's not good because we all know the ending going into it. It's not good because, you know, it's just not very good filmmaking.
Yeah, I agree. It just was not put together very well. And the characters, I just didn't care enough about them.
You didn't care about leader Antonio Banderas.
I love Antonio. Antonio Banderas is excellent. But it really, but then again, though, I'm surprised you've got a movie like The Revenant where, oh, these people were put through such horrifying, brutal conditions to shoot this movie. Well, it was the same thing. These guys were trapped.
No, actors weren't trapped underground.
But the actors still went through a lot of harsh conditions.
Yes, they were hot instead of cold.
They
in
were
the
hot
Revenant.
Instead of cold. There were no bears underground.
See,
but
minus one for the 33. No bears.
But yeah, now it's 32. So I don't know. I just I think for people who love movies based on true stories, and if they remember, they want to see more like a dramatized version of what happened with these miners. They can go see this movie. However, you have actual real footage and documentaries that are real that tell the story probably even stronger than this movie does.
I'm sure, it probably hasn't happened yet, but a better documentary will come out all about the 2010 Chilean mine story than the 33.
Yeah.
And it's not the third movie released this week on DVD, not as good as Steve Jobs, but much better than the 33, is one we actually talked about a few weeks ago, Trumbo. Trumbo is now out on DVD, and if you've seen Spotlight, and you've seen Steve Jobs, and you've seen most of all the other Oscar nominees, then you can check out Trumbo.
And if you liked Hail Caesar, I think Trumbo would be of some appeal as well.
If you like the era, not necessarily the genre.
Right. Old Hollywood, but also if you're into political science and the combination with Old Hollywood and knowing more about the McCarthy era and how these writers were blacklisted, then it's certainly, it's an intriguing movie. It's not a great movie, but it's decent.
Well, Trumbo was nominated for, I think, exactly one Oscar, and that's Best Actor, Bryan Cranston.
He doesn't have a shot in hell.
No, he's not going to win anything, but it'll be good to see him, you know, in reaction shots sitting in the Oscar audience.
Pretending like he might have a chance.
But that leads me to a segment Hannah and I would like to call If We Pick the Winners. The Oscars are coming up two Sundays from now, February 28th. And if we pick the winners, I have my ideas on who will win. Hedging, you know, if I had to bet money, I think I know who will win. That doesn't mean they should win,
Hannah. Or that they will win.
So next week we're going to do the big categories, you know, actor, actress, director, picture. But maybe this week I'd like to focus on some of the lesser categories, but just as important, I am sure. And I'd like to start off with the writing categories, which I think can be very complicated.
Well, and especially since Aaron Sorkin's not in that category, it makes the choice even more difficult.
Well, then let's start with Best Adapted Screenplay. The Big Short, Brooklyn, Carol, The Martian, Room. Hannah, if you pick the winner, who is the Best Adapted Screenplay?
Well, you know I would love it to be The Martian. I don't, again, that's my heart because I think that it was an amazingly good adaptation of this book. And people who had read the book and saw the movie seemed to be very, very satisfied with the adaptation. I think Room has got all this love going for it. I thought Room was also an excellent adaptation. I'm not sure. I think if Brie Larson ends up winning Best Actress for Room, that the voters might not look at Room for this category. So, but my heart would be The Martian, but I don't think it will win.
The Martian is a very smart screenplay, but if I pick, I disagree. If I pick the winner, I would pick the smarter screenplay, which is The Big Short. They brought across to the audience an extremely complicated subject, which is the housing crisis, the housing foreclosures. And they made it funny. They made it interesting. And I cared and I learned. And it was so creative. People breaking the fourth wall just to look at me and explain the corruption, why I should be upset. And I was. It worked. I walked out of the theater furious. And a screenplay made me do that. I am all for The Big Short.
Yeah, the ones that I really just don't think have a chance. Carol, I think, does not have a chance.
Nor does Brooklyn.
And Brooklyn really doesn't either. So I see where you're coming from with The Big Short in terms of being able to translate such a complicated topic into a movie that was accessible to a wide audience. Room, I think, translated a really difficult story and tragic story that when people read the book, some of them don't want to see the movie because they read the book and they feel that it's going to be too difficult to watch.
You know, my wife is at the movie theater right now as we are talking, and she's watching Room, and she's only doing it because her friend wanted to see it. And I told her, you're not going to like the subject material. You're going to have a bad dream tonight. I'm just warning you.
But I'm glad she's seeing it because it really is so well done. That was one of my biggest surprises of the year because it's not the type of movie that I normally would really, really root for in these categories. But I was very impressed with the acting. I think the two leads, again, the adorable Jacob Tremblay and Brie Larson, I think they made this movie really work. I'm not so sure if it had been other actors in those roles that it would have resonated as much as it did, but they were a very powerful pair in this movie, and I think that's why it worked. Whether or not that makes it best adapted screenplay, I'm not so sure. But again, The Martian I just put at the top because I think it translated from a really good book into a really good movie that a lot of people really liked.
Well, the original screenplay category I think is even more complicated than its adapted cousins. Bridge of Spies, Ex Machina, Inside Out, Spotlight, Straight Outta Compton.
They're all over the place on that one because every one of those movies is very different. I haven't seen Ex Machina. That's the only one that I haven't seen, so I can't.
Shame.
I know. Maybe I'll try and see next week. But when I look at all of these, like Inside Out, there's something to be said for that potentially getting.
Isn't that something?
For that.
An animated movie being talked about for its screenplay.
And that's why I think it deserves some real.
That's because
attention.
It's so strong. Inside Out hit me in my core.
Well, it is creative. It's an animated movie that's unlike anything you've seen before. So when you're talking about an original screenplay, what better would represent an original screenplay than one where you have truly not seen anything quite like it make it to screen like that? So that's one of my heart favorites, but I don't necessarily think it would win,
But what absolutely. Should win, Hannah?
I think Spotlight should win. Mm. I really do. I think when you look at a movie that is designed to have an impact and to get people thinking about social justice and investigative journalism again and the power that the media can have if it focuses its attention in the right place and is given the resources to tell and investigate and explore really good stories, I think that Spotlight deserves that extra little push to sort of remind people why this type of movie is important and why the whole institution of journalism is important. It's sort of a, you know, All the President's Men post-Watergate type of investigation, and I don't think we've seen anything quite like it in several years.
I think Spotlight is my third favorite on this list. I'm going to go ahead and throw out Bridge of Spies and Straight Outta Compton. They were good, but they're not the best. And it really comes down to Ex Machina and Inside Out for me. Spotlight's close, but Ex Machina and Inside Out each impacted me in separate ways. Inside Out just shook me because I have a kid. And the screenplay is about a kid and the changes the kid undergoes and their emotions. And it just works on every level. I love it. But Ex Machina was so out of left field, sci-fi, but deep introspective philosophy, artificial intelligence, what does it all mean? And it was carried out so well. I really have a good piece of love for Ex Machina, but I think in the end, I would like Inside Out to take this home.
I would be okay with Inside Out taking it home or Spotlight. Xbox and I just think enough people have not seen it. I suspect that Academy members, even voting members, for the most part, are going to go with one of the others just because they are better known to the majority of people. And again, I haven't seen it, so I can't really say that I don't think it will win. But if I had my druthers, I would give it to Spotlight or Inside Out for sure.
Well, in a category that's also, I think it's easier to pick, but it's just as diverse, is Best Documentary. And those are Amy, Cartel Land, The Look of Silence, What Happened to Miss Simone, and Winter on Fire, Ukraine's Fight for Freedom. I've seen them all. None of them were in my top five. I actually don't particularly love any of these. I know which one is going to win. I'm pretty sure The Look of Silence is going to win because it's kind of a sequel, and they're going to make up for the fact that the better half of it, The Act of Killing, didn't win like 2-3 years ago. I'm going to throw out Winter on Fire, Ukraine's Fight for Freedom. Maidan last year did it better. So if I could pick the winner, it'd come down to the music, either Amy or What Happened, Miss Simone, and I'm going What Happened, Miss Simone. I liked it the best. There were a lot of music documentaries last year. Amy, Nirvana, Kurt Cobain, Montage of Heck, Janis Joplin, and What Happened, Miss Simone. Well, and that one was just really good.
There's another one, though, that I saw at the AFI Documentary Festival, which was Mavis. And which is about Mavis Staples, the Staples family singers. And that one was such fun. And I miss the fact that none of these documentary entries ever seem to acknowledge fun. Oh, there was that one music one a few years ago. Oh, I'm blanking on the name, but it was a musical documentary, and it did well, and it was a fun one, but it's very rare, and so all of these are really depressing in the end. And I finally did see What Happened, Miss Simone last week.
And it's not that depressing.
It's not so much depressing, but you've got this woman who is this incredibly talented singer and pianist, and it turns out she really was probably suffering from an undiagnosed bipolar disorder, and her life just really unraveled at a certain point. And it's really just sort of sad to see how this woman who at the height of her game was just had such promise and then essentially died, you know, just unknown and with obvious mental illness. And it was, so that part was sad to me. I thought the movie was a little draggy. I thought it's great that they've got all this actual footage from her performances and to have talked with her and her and family members over the years to get this bigger picture of what this woman was going through. But ultimately, I didn't love it. And that's the problem, is when I'm picking a best documentary, I want to love it. And the documentary that I loved this year was Best of Enemies, and it's not even on this list.
So the one that should win is not even nominated.
Exactly.
I did not know a lot about Nina Simone. I knew her name. I knew why she was famous. I knew she was a singer. And I knew it was before I was born. And I end up learning a lot about Nina Simone, and I'm happy I did, because what a fascinating character. What a fascinating singer and pianist. And I liked it so much, I went out and put that my favorite song off the documentary onto my musical playlist. You know, it starts slow. Ain't got no money, ain't got no shoes. And it's one that picks up by the end. I got my head. You know,
sing it, Charlie.
Great song. I really grew to appreciate her as an artist. I got a lot out of What Happened, Miss Simone, and I really hope it takes home the gold, even though it won't.
Yeah, because then you got Amy going, you know, I don't want to go to rehab.
Amy has cleaned up this year in documentary awards. Amy has won just about everything it could win.
And I do think that Amy has the edge in this category. And so if I had to take a guess right now, I would probably give the edge to Amy. I don't want a movie like The Look of Silence just because it...
But it's important, Hannah.
It's important, but... There's important, and then there's...
No, there's genocide, and genocide is important to learn about, and that is The Look of Silence.
But that's why Race is a good, important movie. There's still important things to it. There's information out of all of these movies that is worth hearing and learning. But you could make that same argument, Winter on Fire and what's going on in Ukraine, and it's a very timely story as well. And so...
Now, Winter on Fire was just a sequel to Maidan. This time you have people who were there commenting on it. Maidan was just first-hand footage. But the look of silence is very important. It might not be rewatchable, but it is it's, oh my God, you have people on screen energetically telling us how they slaughtered thousands of people with machetes, and they're just kind of joking about it, and like it's a really good thing that they did it. It's fascinating.
Yeah, but again, I don't think enough people will have seen it to vote for it, so I think Amy will be the one that will take it home, because it's such a recent story, and people... And her story is so tragic, and I think when you have this individual person that everybody knew their music, and you saw her going off the rails even during her young life, and you've got a documentary you hear from her father, you see that the people around her failed her, and I just think ultimately that movie is going to be the one that breaks through. Again, none of them are... I didn't love any of these documentaries, but I think Amy will win.
All right, we might have time for one more. Is there one more category you would like to tell us what should win?
I would say that... you know, these things like the cinematography category, I don't ever quite get what exactly we are supposed to be deciding. When you look at the movies are Carol, The Hateful Eight, Mad Max Fury Road, The Revenant, and Sicario. Five completely different movies visually. I don't know how you compare it. It's like they're comparing apples and oranges.
Well, let me compare it. I can compare it for you. Sicario is only on there because Roger Deakins threw on a forward-looking infrared on the lens, and everyone lost their minds. Oh, he shot in infrared. Let me nominate this. No. Now, Roger Deakins is great, but throw it out. That's just a gimmick. Mad Max Fury Road is on there because, whoa, it's like 90% action, and it is everywhere. It's right up in their face, and it's looking at these crazy vehicular contraptions, and it's so well done. How to make, you know, cars and trucks fighting each other in the desert. That intense. The Hateful Eight in one room. It takes place in a room, basically. 95% of it's in one room. And they created suspense, even though it's about 8x8. I mean, it's tiny. And The Revenant, I think we know. Ugh. It's because it's the most gorgeous film of the year. Emmanuel Lubezki is about to win his third straight Best Cinematography Oscar. I hope The Revenant takes this home, and I think it will. It is gorgeous.
Yeah, I think it will be ultimately between Mad Max Fury Road and The Revenant for cinematography. I will give the edge to The Revenant. It is a gorgeous movie. I hated it.
Natural light.
I hated the movie.
Come on.
I mean, I don't get it. It's brutal to watch. I don't get it. But it was...
Nature is brutal.
But nature is gorgeous.
Bears are brutal.
And bears to somebody are gorgeous.
And man is cruel to man.
Everybody's cruel. But when you're cruel with a big sweeping vista of the wilderness behind you, then somehow it's all okay and awards worthy. So I suspect that The Revenant will win Best Cinematography. And frankly, I'd rather see it win Best Cinematography than Best Picture.
You're about to be disappointed.
Oh my gosh. It will kill me. It will kill me. It will kill me more than the bear.
It'll give you something to talk about.
That's right.
So to remind you what we did talk about on this podcast of Cinema Clash, we talked about Race, the widest release this week, how it's stuffed full of plot, yet drags, oddly enough, but in a very important story. I didn't care for it. I say go see Selma or 42 if you haven't seen them yet. But if you have seen them and you dig that genre, all right, check it out.
Yep, I agree.
I told you about The Club, Spotlight from the Inside Out, but in Chile. I dug it. I think it's fine. If there are foreign films you haven't seen yet in the best foreign film category, like Son of Saul or Mustang, check those out first. But if you've seen them, check out The Club.
I have no interest in seeing The Club, and so I would just encourage anyone who hasn't seen Spotlight yet to make sure they see that first.
Yeah, we talked about the new DVD. Spotlight will be out next Tuesday. Hannah really wants you to check that out, but I say while you're waiting for next Tuesday, take the time to check out Steve Jobs, but we both say skip the 33.
Probably, yeah.
And we touched on some of the lesser Oscar categories, so we talked about the screenplays. We clashed over the documentary, and we certainly clashed over cinematography. I think you need to go to cinematography school, Hannah.
Hey, no, we actually ultimately agreed that The Revenant will win cinematography.
Somehow you came around full circle. I don't know how you did that.
I argue that the movie as a whole is not that great. It's got beautiful cinematography, so give it cinematography, and please don't give it Best Picture.
Well, next week we're going to have more first release movies to talk about that are going to hit the theater. We're going to talk about the action thriller Gods of Egypt and another Olympiad feel-good based on a true story, kind of Eddie the Eagle.
Yeah, so if Race doesn't quite float your boat, wait a week, and Eddie might soar a little further
than Race.
It's
much lighter material.
It's definitely much lighter material.
All right, so thanks again for listening to the Cinema Clash. I am Charlie Jewell, here with Hannah Bookdahl.
Thanks, Charlie.
All right. Thank you very much.
Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah is presented twice each weekend on RadioSt.Pete.com at 5:15 Eastern on Saturday and 9:15 on Sunday mornings. Cinema Clash with Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com and Hannah Buckdahl of ChickFlix.net. Listen again for Cinema Clash on RadioSt.Pete.com.